Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with veteran jazz guitarist Peter Curtis. We had a good conversation about his latest 2022 CD, Pete's Pandemic Playlist. It's a solo guitar outing full of songs that went through his head at various times through this pandemic. It was recorded at home, primarily during lockdown. Over the years, he has performed or recorded with notable jazz and blues musicians like James Carter, Freddie Cole, Taj Mahal, Barbara Morrison, and the great James Moody. That's taken him all over the U.S. and Canada. Enjoy his story.
Well, hey, Matt, thanks for taking a minute out for Neon Jazz today. I appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me.
You bet. I love the name of it, Pete's Pandemic Playlist. You know, it's like, as much as we don't want to talk about the pandemic and let it overwhelm us, it's been such a big part of our existence. It's been such a big part of what we've lived through. And I guess with that in mind, how does it feel to be able to have a release out that you have the opportunity to hopefully promote this live and to do some live shows?
It feels great to have this out, and I'm looking forward to do some shows of this music. I'm just starting to get back to playing some live gigs again. I've been very much on the conservative side in terms of safety and not wanting to go out. I've turned down a lot of gigs over the pandemic because I just didn't feel comfortable. Yeah, I'm starting to get back into playing out live, and it feels great.
So I guess the other part of this is that during this time of pandemic and during this time of quarantine, we've been at home. There's been more opportunity for us to be with ourselves and to have reflection. And I'm curious what you learned about yourself over this like 2-year period that maybe you didn't realize before that's going to make you stronger as things hopefully open up more and you promote a new album.
Wow. I wasn't expecting such a personal reflective question. Well, I'll start with myself in how it relates to my significant other, Sophie. We got engaged during the pandemic, and after about a year of living together and being together pretty much 24/7 during the pandemic, it sort of became clear to me that if we could get through this together, we could probably get through most things together. We got engaged, so that was good. Well, I think I already knew this, but I guess I learned it to a greater extent is I'm very content to be at home with my guitar, which I already knew, but you know, being in a room with my guitar for, you know, a couple of years wasn't really that much of a trial. I mean, I missed playing out, but not as much as I thought I would, because I had recording gear at my house and I would put videos up on YouTube, and thereby, you know, felt like I was getting some, you know, communication with an audience, though not the immediate kind of communication you get from a gig, but people would respond to videos that I put on YouTube. And I guess I realized the extent to which I am comfortable. As long as I've got music, I can be at home for a long period of time. So I guess I learned that about myself. Well, I mean, which I already knew, but I didn't know it to this extent. A lot of people told me that they were bored I was never bored. And I remember my late uncle Sam was a musician, and I remember very clearly him telling me when I was a child, if you're a musician, you can never be bored. And I completely agree with that. And I don't think it's just for music. I think it's, you know, any time anybody's got something that really engages them, that challenges them, and that they're passionate about, they'll probably never be bored. I mean, for me, I'm lucky enough that I have that in my life, and we're fortunate enough that I have that in my life, and it's music. Most of the time, very, very content. Well, pretty much all the time. I mean, obviously I felt it was horrible that, you know, so many people were sick and dying, but in terms of my own life, not having to, you know, not going out wasn't really that much of a trial for me. I miss my students. I miss teaching my students face-to-face. I teach at Riverside City College. So I did miss the face-to-face interaction with students. But, you know, we did a lot of stuff. I taught online. And instead of doing concerts, I had them make recordings and videos, and we placed them on YouTube. And so it just, you know, it forced us to be creative about other ways to be creative, about other ways to perform and record music.
Well, so this album is like solo guitar. Talk to me a little bit about how you constructed and kind of put this together.
Well, I've been doing this thing. I had a New Year's resolution at the beginning of 2019 where I decided I would do post one song a month on YouTube, solo guitar stuff. And I've been doing that ever since. And so I'm into my, 19, 20, 21. So I guess I'm entering the fourth year of doing that now. For 2021, I decided I was going to do all songs that the pandemic made me think of. In 2020, I had done a couple of songs that the pandemic sort of made me think of. Don't Stand So Close to Me was one, and Don't Fence Me In. But I had another theme that I was working on for most of 2020, which will be a forthcoming album. But anyway, I decided in 2021 I was just going to do songs that the pandemic made me think of or that ran through my head at various times during the pandemic. And so every month starting in January with Staying Alive and then moving on, I just did, one of those songs, posted it, and then by the end of the year I had an album.
So what are you hoping ultimately the listener gets from this experience? What do you want them to get from it?
I want them to enjoy the music. You know, I'm sorry that I don't have a more philosophical or profound answer. I want them to enjoy solo guitar and accompanied guitar playing. It's all unaccompanied except for one song. But I mean, it's not like I was thinking that these are songs of hope in the face of adversity or anything like that. These are songs that have gone through my head at various times through this pandemic. I Will Survive, Don't Stand So Close to Me. Some songs that were going through my head during the pandemic didn't make the album because they really didn't really fit solo guitar. One of which was Leonard Cohen's The Future. Another of which was R.E.M.'s It's the End of the World as We Know It. Neither of which, both of those songs are so lyrically driven that they didn't really translate to. I wasn't able to figure out a way to do them on an accompanied guitar that was made them interesting. But I mean, obviously, I want people to enjoy the music. I'm sorry if I'm being loquacious here talking too much. I'm just sort of figuring out what I think as I speak.
Yeah.
So
I dig it.
In terms of what to get out of it. So I want them to enjoy the music. I want them to enjoy the arrangement, the solo guitar playing, except for that one song where I do a duet with the sax player, which, by the way, was recorded at the height of lockdown, and we recorded our parts in different houses in different parts of town. My colleague, Charlie Richard, who's my colleague here at Riverside City College, the irony there is we were doing the song The Nearness of You, and we weren't, anywhere near each other. I hope that I'm adding something to the canon of unaccompanied jazz guitar playing, and that I am reflecting the time in which I'm alive. And so I see myself in the, trying to work within the tradition of great unaccompanied jazz guitar players who have come before me and who are my contemporaries, and trying to do something that reflects, my moment. And this is a moment we've all been going through, and this is sort of hopefully a musical reflection of that, and hopefully it's enjoyable in some way, and maybe brings a little some levity, I hope, to what's been a rather dark time.
I remember there was somebody at one point, probably last year around this time, that I interviewed that said, everybody that releases material during this time, it's going to be in kind of a pantheon of special releases. And, we're going to remember this time, and specifically just the way that you've labeled this and just kind of this time period. I think that's pretty indicative of what you've said, kind of capturing the essence of it. And speaking of, talk to me a little bit about how all this began for you. How did playing an instrument and getting into jazz, how did this start for you in childhood?
Well, we had a guitar in our house. My father had briefly taken classical guitar lessons. He was a very musical person. He had a beautiful singing voice and could do. He was kind of a crooner type and could do very good sort of impressions of crooners. And some of my fondest memories later are accompanying him. Originally, like most kids of my generation, I wanted to play rock and roll. However, my father was somewhat estranged from his sister for much of my childhood. And then they kind of mended mended fences and became close again about a year into me playing guitar. And that was a hugely serendipitously positive thing for me and my musical development, because his sister, my aunt, Bobby, married the great jazz bass player Bob Cranshaw. So I, at the age of 12, I was introduced to an uncle who was this great jazz bass player who became a hugely significant mentor for me. Though interestingly, when I first, you know, when I first met him and was first exposed to jazz, I was just so blown away by it. But it didn't really occur to me that that was something I could ever do. And maybe I was right, but it seemed like that was something that you had to be a black genius to do. Like, it just seemed like something from, you know, his culture, and, you know, he was so obviously brilliant musically. At 12 years old, I thought, oh, well, this is just beyond me. And it wasn't. And I also think that, you know, I still was, as an adolescent, I still had, I kind of wanted to get my rock and roll yah-yahs out. And I played in rock bands through high school until I was about 17. And then I started, I was dating this girl, actually, who liked to sing, and she wanted to sing some jazz songs, and she got me to accompany her, which got me thinking, maybe I can do this. Maybe this is not sort of beyond me. Anyway, towards the end of high school, I knew that I wanted to be a musician, but it was all sort of in co-ed. I wasn't really clear on what direction I wanted to go in. I mean, in high school, I thought I wanted to be a rock musician. My uncle, the late Bob Cranshaw, suggested that I apply to the Berklee College of Music, which I did, and I got in. And, you know, almost immediately after getting there, I realized, okay, I want to do jazz. This is what I want to do. So, that was very difficult, and, you know, because I think, like I said, most of my high school years I was playing in rock bands and stuff. I wasn't working on jazz. So when I first got there, I felt, you know, and some of my peers were people like Roy Hargrove and Kurt Rosenwinkel and Jeff Keyser and some of the greatest jazz musicians of my generation. So I felt very behind at first. But I worked hard and I practiced, and by the time I left there, I felt like, yeah, you know, I can do this.
So talk to me a little bit about influences, more specifically from jazz. Maybe, you know, musicians you saw live or recordings that really swayed the way that you found your voice on the guitar.
Okay, well, one other thing I should tell you, and this is, again, it has to do with my Uncle Bob, because he's such a seminal figure for me. But after my first year at Berklee, I was still, you know, just trying to get into jazz and, you know, working on it, learning solos, transcribing solos, and, you know, learning things off records. And he said to me, you know, you should take some classical lessons. And I thought, okay, well, you know, that's good advice. So I took some classical lessons over the summer. And interestingly, I found initially classical guitar came much faster to me than jazz did. I picked it up way quicker, which I think is largely because, you know, it's much more clearly laid out for you. You know, you've got the notes. These are the notes that you're going to play. And if you work up the technique to play them, you can play them. Whereas with jazz and developing the skills to improvise, I think, at least for me in the earlier stages, it was harder. Now I think, for me, it's easier to play. I feel like I'm more comfortable playing jazz than classical, but in most instances. But early on, I felt like I made more headway with it. So, I think another part of it too was I loved the completeness of classical guitar. I loved the fact that it used guitar as a full unaccompanied instrument. You know, you've got the bass, the melody, the inner harmonies. I was very attracted to jazz guitarists who really used the guitar in that way, like Joe Pass. I later discovered Gene Bertoncini, Martin Taylor, and now, you know, a younger guitarist who's just phenomenal, Pasquale Grasso. Though he wasn't one of the ones that inspired me coming up, but Joe Pass was a huge influence. Huge influence. Later, Martin Taylor, Gene Bertoncini, like I mentioned, Lenny Breaux, huge influence. So I really was in, I've always loved the idea of using the guitar as a full unaccompanied instrument, you know, in the way that piano can be used. And I think that that was a big part of what I loved about classical guitar repertoire, and what I still love about it is that it really exploits the guitar's full capabilities as a contrapuntal, harmonic, and melodic instrument. It took me a while to kind of figure out, you know, well, I studied classical guitar, I got degrees in classical guitar, I teach both classical and jazz guitar, but I feel like, you know, if I may say, my voice has been kind of fusing what I've learned from classical guitar technique and or repertoire and using that in an accompanied jazz guitar context, which hopefully you hear on this record.
Every day you get to wake up and be a professional musician and create music. What's the best part of this process for you?
Because I don't really think there is one best part for me. I feel like I am so incredibly fortunate to be able to make a living playing and teaching music. Well, truth be known, the lion's share of my living comes from teaching. I teach at Riverside City College. I've taught here for 21 years, and I love it. I love teaching music to young people and working with them and helping them develop as artists. I find that incredibly fulfilling. I love performing. I find a tremendous amount of satisfaction with, you know, coming up with arrangements for solo guitar. I love, developing my ideas and you know, coming up with a finished product. So sometimes it's frustrating. Like, if I'm working on, you know, a solo guitar arrangement, you know, I feel like I'm hitting a wall, or if I, working on recording something and it's not coming out the way I want it, that can be frustrating. But usually on the other end of that frustration is satisfaction that is commensurately large with the frustration that preceded it. So whatever the challenge is, if I get to the other side of the challenge, then I feel this immense satisfaction, and that's really fulfilling too.
Everything's going to come down to this. Everyone has a perception or an idea of who they think you are, your family, your friends, your fans, but ultimately you live your life. You have a perception of you. Who do you think you are?
Soon I will be a husband, though I am not yet, but soon I will be a husband. I am a son. I am a teacher. I am a musician. I am a father to dogs and a cat. And I'm trying to be the best musician I can, the best teacher I can, and the best person I can in all of those, in all the aforementioned areas. I don't know. I hope that's not too general an answer.
No, it's not. It's not. This is a very open-ended question. It's the final one. It's the hardest one. So that's perfect. Peter, thank you for opening up, talking about the album, your life and music. Good luck with everything as we move forward.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you doing the interview.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players and minds in New York City, Kansas City, and spots all over the world, giving fans all that jazz. Thanks to Peter for his time, music, and cool. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Domino in the iTunes Store. Visit NeonJazz at YouTube.com. And for everything Neon Jazz all the time, go to the NeonJazz.blogspot.com. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends.
Neon Jazz.